All right, if you would, turn with me this evening to the book of 1 Samuel, chapter number 20. We continue our Sunday evening series through 1 Samuel. That's your favorite sound, ain't it, Montine? We continue our little journey here through 1 Samuel as we take a look at this lengthy chapter tonight. Here's what I want to do. This chapter has 42 verses. And that's a lot. So what I want to do is I want to divide it up into four sections, and probably we'll make an effort to get through all four of them this evening, but they're essentially four scenes that unfold, and that's how we'll divide the narrative up tonight in each of those four scenes. And then what I intend to do is to actually read scene one, talk about it, then move to scene two, talk about it, and so forth. But remember, now, here's the setting. Here's the background. King Saul has done everything in his human ability to have David killed, murdered, put to death. He tried numerous covert attempts, all of which failed. And then last week, we looked at numerous overt attempts. He tried to do it quietly behind the scenes, and when that didn't work, he flat out said, "I want him dead." That was the beginning of chapter 19. "I want David dead." And we outlined out of chapter 19 last week 8 separate attempts on David's life by King Saul. Finally, Saul says, "If you want something done right, do it yourself." And he goes, leaves the throne, and goes to try to kill David on his own. But God humbles him. In fact, God humiliates him very plainly. And God takes Saul and just turns his plan on his head. Saul leaves the throne room with the intention of slaughtering David, killing him, putting him to death. But what Saul ends up doing is prophesying or bringing praise to God, lying stripped of all of his royal robe, lying a night and a day, without all of his royal apparel, just prophesying and praising God. That's who our God is. He has that strength and he has that ability to turn the plans of men inside out. And so now the narrative turns. And we get back to David and Jonathan. And tonight's story is a story of covenant and it is a story of friendship. And if you don't get this, you'll miss it all. This is about the covenant relationship between David and between Jonathan. David, rightfully, is in fear for his life. And the only hope that he has of deliverance is through the relationship that he has with Jonathan. Now, obviously, it's bigger than that, as he is depending on God. But from the human end, in the narrative tonight, he finds security through covenant. Security through covenant. I want you to notice with me, scene number one, and this is the planning stage. The planning stage is David and Jonathan plan together, verses 1 through 10. And David fled from Naoth in Ramah and came and said before Jonathan, "What have I done? And what is mine iniquity, and what is my sin before thy father, that he seeketh my life?" And he, that is Jonathan, said unto him, "God forbid, thou shalt not die. Behold, my father will do nothing, either great or small, but that he will show it me. And why should my father hide this thing from me? It is not so." And David swore moreover and said, "Thy father certainly knoweth that I have found grace in thine eyes." And he saith, let not Jonathan know this, lest he be grieved. But truly, as the Lord liveth and as thy soul liveth, there is but a step between me and death. Then said Jonathan unto David, "Whatsoever thy soul desireth, I will even do it for thee." And David said unto Jonathan, "Behold, tomorrow is the new moon, and I should not fail to sit with the king at meat, But let me go, that I may hide myself in the field unto the third day at even. If thy father at all miss me, then say, David earnestly asked leave of me that he might run to Bethlehem, his city, for there is a yearly sacrifice there for all the family. If he say thus, it is well, thy servant shall have peace. But if he be very wroth, then be sure that evil is determined by him. Therefore, thou shalt deal kindly with thy servant, for thou hast brought thy servant into a covenant of the Lord with thee, notwithstanding, if there be in me iniquity, slay me thyself, for why shouldest thou bring me to thy father? And Jonathan said, far be it from thee, for if I knew certainly that evil were determined by my father to come upon thee, then would not I tell it thee? Then said David to Jonathan, who shall tell me, or what if thy father answereth thee roughly? I'm going to use a phrase tonight that I am afraid that we as Baptists are woefully ignorant of. And let me just say, at least I am. This is something that I realize, and as I study more of Scripture, that I realize that I don't know enough about. And that is the idea of covenant. The idea of covenant. You know that the word covenant is used nearly 300 times in the Bible. This is not a minor subject. This is a major subject. This is a big deal in the Bible, the idea of covenant. I don't know if we're too afraid of sounding like other denominations that we don't like talking about this, but here in this text, in this passage that we have before us tonight, David finds security. He finds assurance in the covenant that had been made with Jonathan. So just for the sake of clarity, let's make sure we're all talking the same language. What is a covenant? What is a covenant? And simply put, a covenant is a strong or solemn agreement between two consenting parties. It is an oath, a commitment. Normally it involves pledges and promises, and normally involves relationship. It is, and I have read that it is the strongest bond for those whose word means something and those who are serious. And in particular, when you get into the Bible times, it was the strongest bond that two parties could enter into. Marriage is a good example of a covenant relationship. A man and wife, what? Solemnly swear for richer, for poor, in sickness, and in health, forsaking all others till death do you part. That's a covenant. That is a lifelong commitment. And the Bible is full of covenants, and it's something that perhaps we should give more thought to. But David and Jonathan, and in particularly it is Jonathan that instigates this covenant with David. Now this is important. Realize, Jonathan is Saul's son. He is the heir to the throne. But he is willing to set that aside to enter into this commitment with David. He's willing to set aside what would rightfully be his, because Jonathan, I believe, is a devout follower of Yahweh or Jehovah God. Jonathan realizes that his father is out of order and will not be long on the throne, and that God has promised that it would be David who would be the next king in Israel. And so Jonathan wisely, rather than fighting against God and God's will, Jonathan wisely enters into covenant, a strong, solemn agreement with David. And just very briefly, I want you to look back and see this from a couple chapters ago. We read it, but then we'll make mention of where we see it again in tonight's text. Look at chapter 18 in verse number 3. Just for the sake of time, we'll just read this one verse. Chapter 18, verse 3. Then Jonathan and David made a covenant because he loved him as his own soul. In our text tonight, in verse 8, therefore thou shalt deal kindly with thy servant, and for thou hast brought thy servant into a covenant of the Lord. Verse 16 of our text, so Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David. And though we've not gotten there, chapter 23 in verse 18 says, and they too made a covenant. So do you see that over and over and over again? That there was a covenant, there was a bond, there was a commitment, there were pledges made, there were promises made. And listen, God is serious about covenant. God is serious about oath. God is serious about commitment. Saul breaks the oath that was made to the Gibeonites, and God thunders down 3 years of famine because of Saul's breaking of covenant. A little crippled boy named Mephibosheth would find grace in the eyes of David in the future, that when David is sitting on the throne because of this covenant. God is serious about covenant. And here there is this commitment, this pledge that transcends really what Jonathan is seeking, is that when David sits on the throne, even then, Jonathan says, even when you're on the throne, whether I'm here or not, I still want covenant to be kept with my family. And so he finds, and this is what's going on, and that's big picture, that's the background. Very practically from the text, the narrative says, it's time for David to go back to the throne. It is the new moon, it's time for a feast, it's a high day in Israel, and it should be that David would appear back before Saul in the royal throne room. But David is rightfully afraid. Now, I love, in fact, when you're a kid, you have some favorite Bible verses, and there are some that stuck with me a long time. One of my favorite Psalms is Psalms 27. And I want to read just one verse to you. Psalms 27, verse 1, this is a Psalm of David, where David writes and says, the Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the strength of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? Well, Psalms 27 is written with boldness. But just like all the rest of us, David didn't always have that same level of boldness. He also had some times of weakness. And even though God has delivered him from both overt and covert attempts, open and hidden attempts on his life, still David is afraid. And he flees, and seemingly the narrative is something like, as Saul makes his way to Naoth to try to catch David, David flees from Naoth and goes to Jonathan's home, is seemingly what happens here. And David is legit. He asked Jonathan, verse 1, tell me what I've done. Why is it that your father wants me dead? What have I done? Now, we know the answer is nothing. David has done nothing amiss. The problem is not with David. The problem is with Saul. Saul's jealous, unfounded rage. The bitterness that is in him because David's popular and the people love David and Saul is not. But what is somewhat concerning is that Jonathan is seemingly dangerously naive. David says, your father is doing his level best to kill me. Jonathan begins verse 2, God forbid. Or no, that's not true. Listen, he says, God forbid, you're not going to die. In today's vernacular, Jonathan would say, Daddy ain't going to do that. What are you worried about? He's not going to hurt you. Even if he was, he would have told me about it. David says, I don't think you know the man quite as well as you think you do. I'm telling you, there is nothing but a step between me and death. Verse 4, wonderful, wonderful little phrase there at the close of verse number 4. There's just a step between me and death. That's how he felt, and it was real to him. David says, David says, I don't think you understand. And Jonathan, there's this back and forth in this first scene this conversation and this plan that they hatch. David says, "Your father's going to kill me." Jonathan says, "There's no way." David responds by saying, "Obviously, your dad knows that we're friends, and so he's not telling you about this." And in fact, it is obscure in our English translation, but in verse number 3, David swear moreover and said, "Thy father certainly knoweth that I have found grace in your eyes," and says, "And we're not going to tell Jonathan about this, lest he's grieved." What I say is obscure is that word, the word "certainly knoweth" in the Hebrew is the exact same word back to back. Listen to what David is saying. David is saying, "Your father knows." He knows. It's the exact same word that is used. Our translators here translated as "certainly knoweth," but it's the exact same Hebrew word that is repeated back to back. Your father knows. He knows. Get this, Jonathan. Wake up, man. Your father knows that we are in covenant. Your father knows that we are friends, and that's why he's hiding these things from you. And then so Jonathan says in verse number 4, "Well, I said," excuse me, I misspoke, "there is but a step between me and death," is at the close of verse 3. I apologize, I misspoke. "There is but a step between me and death," is that wonderful phrase at the end of verse 3. In verse 4, Jonathan says, "Tell me what to do. Just tell me what to do." And that's how they hatch this plan. David says, "It's time for me to go." Verse 5, "I should go before the king. However, I'm afraid. So here's what we're going to do." And then they hatch this plan. David says essentially, and you're just going to have to deal with this because it's what the text says. David says, "I want you to lie for me." And that's what it is. David says, "I want you to tell your father that the reason why I'm not at the feast is because I've gone to Jerusalem. I'm sorry, I've gone to Bethlehem." Now, he had no intention of going to Bethlehem. It was all a ruse. The whole thing was a setup. God never condones it. God is just saying this is what happened. We are not to bear false witness, but in this case, this is what happens. David says, "If your dad gets mad, if King Saul gets mad because I'm gone, then Jonathan, you'll know that he's determined evil against me. If, on the other hand, he says it's okay that I'm gone, then you'll know that he has determined peace for me." And this is what they discover. This is the plan that they make together. I want you to notice verse number 8. If you would, please. "Therefore, thou shalt deal kindly." Deal kindly there is the Hebrew word hased, which is numerous. It's used many, many, many times in the Old Testament. It has the idea of steadfast love, commitment, mercy, compassion. Wonderful word that is used. It's used throughout Ruth. It's a wonderful word. Here David says, "I want you to deal kindly with me. You've brought me into a covenant." In fact, in verse number 8, David says, "If I've done something wrong, why don't you just kill me yourself? Instead of letting your father do it, just kill me yourself." So there is scene number 1. Scene 2, they go from planning to concocting. Scene 2, they leave Jonathan's house and they enter out into a field that is somewhere near the royal throne room. So let's read together verses 11 through 23. "And Jonathan said unto David, Come and let us go out into the field. And they went out both of them into the field. And Jonathan said unto David, O Lord God of Israel, when I have sounded my father about tomorrow any time, or the third day, and behold, if there be good toward David, and I then send not unto thee and show it thee, the Lord do so and much more to Jonathan. But if it please my father to do thee evil, then I will show it thee and send thee away that thou mayest go in peace and the Lord be with thee as he has been with my father." Simply put, verses 11 through 13, Jonathan says, I'll do what you want. That plan that you've made about saying that you're going to Bethlehem and that's why you're not here, I'll do that and I'll find out. I'll find out whether or not my father really wants you dead. Now, verse 14. And thou shalt not only... Now, this is the beauty of this covenant. Notice Jonathan's words. And thou shalt not only, while yet I live, show me the kindness of the Lord, that I die not. And just stop. It was customary when a new king, and in particular when it was a new family, would take over the throne to make sure that there would be no rivals from the previous administration, from the previous family, customarily the new king would kill the entire family of the old king. That's just the way it was done. It doesn't make it right. It's just the way it was done. Listen to what Jonathan is saying. Jonathan is saying, I know you're going to take the throne. I know you're going to be king. But when you are, don't kill my family. That is a statement of faith that David will assume the throne, but is also asking compassion based on covenant here. Verse 15, but also thou shalt not cut off thy kindness from my house forever. David keeps this, again, many years in the future. No, not when the Lord hath cut off the enemies of David, every one from the face of the earth. Again, Jonathan's saying, you're going to take the throne. You're going to rule. You're going to reign. There's going to be a time when you, David, when you are the man, when God is going to give you victory over your enemies. Verse 16, so Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David, saying, let the Lord even require it at the hand of David's enemies. So they covenant again, and now they're going to concoct a story here. And Jonathan, verse 17, and Jonathan caused David to swear again because he loved him, for he loved him as he loved his own soul. And again, there's nothing sensual about this. This is two men who love the Lord, who were battle-hardened soldiers that have fought together. They bled together. And they've wept together. These are two men who are closer than brothers. And they are now covenanting with one another. Verse 18, then Jonathan said to David, tomorrow is the new moon, and thou shalt be missed, because thy seat will be empty. And here's the plan. Here's how I'm going to let you know whether good or evil is determined upon you. When thou hast stayed 3 days, then thou shalt go down quickly and come to the place where thou didst hide thyself when the business was in hand, and shalt remain by the stone easel. And I will shoot 3 arrows on the side thereof as though I shot at a mark. Behold, I will send a lad, saying, go find the arrows. If I expressly say unto the lad, behold, the arrows are on this side of thee, take them, then come thou, for there is peace to thee and no hurt, as the Lord liveth. But if I say thus unto the young man, behold, the arrows are beyond thee, go thy way, for the Lord hath sent thee away, and as touching the matter which thou and I have spoken of, behold, the Lord be between thee and me forever. So scene 2 finds them in the field, covenanting and concocting a story. Here it is. Jonathan says, I'll go to the throne room. I'm going to find out whether or not Dad wants you dead, or whether or not he's going to bring peace. And here will be the sign. Go hide. I'll tell some story. I'll tell Dad, I'll tell the king that you've gone to Bethlehem to make sacrifice, even though we know it's not true. I'll tell him that and wait to see how he responds. And if he responds peaceably, then I'm going to take my bow and arrow and I'm going to shoot 3 arrows and I'll have them land at a certain spot and I'll send my servant to get them. And if it's on this side of the stone and I say, they're right here, stop where you are, then David, everything's all right. You can come get the arrows and you come on into the throne. But if I tell this servant to keep going, that's code. That means David... you keep going. If I tell the servant that they're beyond thee, that you need to go a little further, that is our secret language. That's our code to let you know dad is going to kill you. My father has ill intentions. And so if you hear me tell the servant, go further or go beyond you, then you'll know that you need to leave. You need to hightail it out of here because he's going to try to kill you. There's the plan that they concoct together. So we find them at Jonathan's house, then we find them in the field. But then scene three, we find David hiding, Jonathan defending. Scene three, verses 24 through 34. So David hid himself in the field, and when the new moon was come, the king sat him down to eat meat. And the king sat upon his seat, as at other times, even upon a seat by the wall. And Jonathan arose, and Abner were introduced to him. He'll play a key role in many, many narratives coming. And Abner sat by Saul's side, and David's place was empty. Verse 26, nevertheless, Saul spake not anything that day, for he thought, something has befallen him. He is not clean. Surely he is not clean. It is an interesting note. Here is Saul, his mind warped, twisted, filled with bitterness, an evil spirit from the Lord plaguing him from time to time. Yet he still has enough mind to know that Leviticus says if you're unclean, you're to keep yourself back from this new moon, from this feast. Yet at the same time, his mind is so twisted and so warped that Saul can't see his own uncleanness. He has it in mind. Here's why David's not here, because he's unclean. Not bearing in mind that his heart is so filled with malice, anger, jealousy, wrath, that he wants David dead at any cost. It's interesting, isn't it? How blind that we can, and I think it's okay to put ourselves in, how blind sometimes we can be to our own failures. Easy to see them in others, but not in ourselves. Verse 27, it came to pass on the morrow, which was the second day of the month, that David's place was empty. And Saul said unto Jonathan his son, wherefore cometh not the son of Jesse to meet, neither yesterday nor today? And here comes the lie. And Jonathan answered Saul, David earnestly asked leave of me to go to Bethlehem. And he said, let me go, I pray thee, for our family hath a sacrifice in the city, and my brother, he hath commanded me to be there. All lies. And now if I have found favor in thine eyes, let me get away, I pray thee, and see my brethren. Therefore he cometh not unto the king's table. Oh, what a tangled web we weave when first we practice to deceive. Then Saul's anger was kindled against Jonathan. And he said unto him, thou son of the perverse, rebellious woman, do not I know that thou hast chosen the son of Jesse to thine own confusion and unto the confusion of thy mother's nakedness? For as long as a son of Jesse liveth upon the ground, thou shalt not be established, nor thy kingdom. Wherefore now send and fetch him unto me, for he shall surely die. And Jonathan answered Saul his father and said unto him, wherefore shall he be slain? What hath he done? And Saul cast a javelin at him to smite him. Wherefore Jonathan knew. You know, that was a light bulb moment for their Jonathan, right? Wherefore Jonathan knew that it was determined of his father to slay David. So Jonathan arose from the table in fierce anger and did eat no meat the second day of the month, for he was grieved for David because his father had done him shame. So there's scene three, David hiding, Jonathan defending. Very simply, on day two of the feast, the king says, where's David? Wasn't here yesterday, wasn't today. Jonathan tells the lie that they had concocted together. Saul doesn't buy it. Saul knows better. And Saul turns his animosity from David to his own son. Difficult language in verse number 30, where he says his anger was kindled against Jonathan. He even attacks his own mother. This is how twisted and warped that Saul's mind is. He badmouths his own wife. He badmouths Jonathan's mother. And essentially what he's saying to him, he's essentially saying to him, you ought to be ashamed of yourself. You've embarrassed me. You've embarrassed your mother, even though she's a rotten, low-down, good-for-nothing somebody. I mean, that's really what he's saying. Don't you realize that as long as David is alive, the throne will never be yours? The people love him. What an embarrassment you are. I mean, that's really, you are an embarrassment to me and your mother. That language, the confusion of your mother's nakedness has to do, the Hebrew language has to do with giving a birth. You're just an embarrassment from day one. What a failure you are. I mean, he is laying it on. That's what he's saying to him. As long as the son of Jesse, as long as David lives, you're not going to be king. And so he says, Saul says, bring him to me, he will surely die. And Jonathan says, why? Now, I don't know about you, but as a parent, sometimes when your children say why, you want to smack them upside the head, don't you? There were a few times when I was growing up that my daddy said, because I said so. And it's very indeed possible my children have heard me say that very same thing. But I don't know about you. Every once in a while I say, God, I need you to send a lightning bolt to make this thing clear. I need to know what to do, make it clear, send a lightning bolt across the sky. Jonathan must have been praying something about like that, but it wasn't a lightning bolt that came zipping by. It was Saul's javelin that came zipping by his head. I mean, the proverbial light went off. Jonathan went from being dangerously naive to just being in danger. It is for real. My father wants him dead. And Jonathan knows David has done nothing to deserve this. All he's done is defend Israel and protected Saul's empire. So scene 3 finds David hiding, Jonathan defending. And then we jump to scene 4. David and Jonathan departing. David and Jonathan departing. Scene 4, verses 35 through 42. And it came to pass, verse 35, and it came to pass in the morning that Jonathan went out into the field at the time appointed with David, and a little lad with him had his servant boy with him. And he said unto his lad, run, find out now the arrows which I shoot. And as the lad ran, he shot an arrow beyond him. And when the lad was come to the place of the arrow which Jonathan had shot, Jonathan cried after the lad and said, is not the arrow beyond thee? There's that secret language. And Jonathan cried after the lad, notice this, make speed, haste, stay not. And Jonathan's lad gathered up the arrows and came to his master. But the lad knew not anything, only Jonathan and David knew the matter. And Jonathan gave his artillery unto his lad and said unto him, go carry them to the city. Now here, that plan that they had come up with, shoot the arrows, that'll determine whether or not my father has evil intentions against you. Jonathan does exactly what he says he's going to do. He shoots the arrow, but he goes even a little step further. Verse 38, where Jonathan says, make speed, haste, stay not. In other words, let's just make sure this is clear. I don't want to send this out in Morse code. I want to make sure David gets it. You need to hightail, get out of here. I was going to say tucktail, and that may be true too. But you need to get out of here. You need to make haste. You need to make speed. You need to stay not. You need to get gone. Father's going to try to kill you. Obviously, they were concerned that Saul would have people watching them. I mean, obviously, and it's not to be paranoid, but obviously they are concerned that King Saul, in all of his jealousy and animosity, and this idea that people are conspiring against him, Jonathan and David are concerned, you know, hey, somebody may be watching us, so we need to do this sort of covertly. And so the boy that's there, he doesn't know anything about this. The servant boy that's there, he just does what he's told. But then again in verse 41, and as soon as the lad was gone, David arose out of a place toward the south and fell on his face to the ground and bowed himself three times, and they kissed one another and wept with one another until David exceeded, or simply David wept even more than Jonathan wept. And Jonathan said to David, "Go in peace, for as much as we have suborned both of us in the name of the Lord, saying, 'The Lord be between me and thee, and between my seed and thy seed forever.'" And he arose and departed, and Jonathan went into the city. What was it that David knew he could depend on? The answer, the covenant relationship he had with Jonathan. David found security in his covenant relationship with Jonathan. His world had been turned upside down. Saul wanted him dead. His own wife, if you remember, Michelle, had sort of turned on him, lied against him. And I guarantee the Philistines wanted him dead. So in the midst of all of this adversity, where would David go? He went to the place where a covenant had been made, a commitment had been made, where he could find chesed, where he could find mercy, compassion, and steadfast love. Let me say it like this. Where will you go when your world gets turned upside down? When the enemies of all righteousness want you dead? When troubles and trials surround you, where will you go? The answer? You need to go where covenant has been made. You can find security in covenant. Now I know sometimes we as Baptists get a little bit afraid of that word, but it's a good word. Maybe one we need to get a little more familiar with. Jesus said, "This blood is the new covenant." It's the New Testament. Same word that is used throughout the New Testament. Testament, covenant. You got the Old Testament, the New Testament, the Old Covenant, the New Covenant. We have a new and better covenant. The finished work of Jesus Christ. And when the enemy comes, when death, when there is but a step between us and death, where are you going to go? Where covenant has been made. Where God has entered into covenant with you through the redemptive work of Jesus Christ. Where God has made a commitment to you, has made a pledge to you. Where God has made a promise to you through the finished work of Jesus Christ. That's the only place where you'll find safety and security. Listen, David leaned on Jonathan, but there was going to come a time when Jonathan was going to be gone, and David would still need someone. Where would he go? He would lean on the covenant that God had made with him. Listen to this. On Christ, a solid rock I stand, all other ground is sinking sand. Listen to these words. His oath, his covenant, his blood. Support me in the whelming flood. I picked that one out on purpose tonight. His oath, his covenant, his blood support me in the whelming flood. When all around my soul gives way, he then is all my hope and stay. Where could I go but to the Lord? When enemies are there, when death is there, when sin and temptation is there, find security in covenant. In the covenant that God has made with you. A commitment, a pledge. And in fact, I've got to read this to you, and then I'll be done tonight. Exodus chapter number 34. Let me tell you about this God. The Lord, Exodus 34 verse 6, "And the Lord passed by before him," that is Moses, "and proclaimed." Well, I want to preach that so much. Listen. God preached a message about God. That's Exodus 34. I've been wanting to preach that for a long time. The Lord preached a message about the Lord. "And the Lord passed before him and proclaimed." The Lord proclaimed. What did God say about himself? The Lord God, merciful and gracious, long-suffering and abundant in chesed. in goodness, in truth. The exact same word is used in Exodus 34, verse 6. Where can you go when you need grace that is greater than your sin? Where covenant has been made, where there is chesed, where there is mercy to be found. There, my dear friends, can you find safety and security. Listen, keeping his promise endangered Jonathan's life, right? Saul tried to kill his own son. Keeping his promise endangered Jonathan's life. Keeping the commitment God made didn't endanger the life of Christ. It demanded the life of Christ for us. Jonathan had more to lose, and yet he was willing to give it up. Christ had much more to lose, yet he was willing to give it up because of the covenant that had been made for us. God has made a commitment that if you will trust in His Son, He will give you eternal life. That is God's commitment to you. That's God's covenant with you. The shed blood, the finished work of His Son is that new covenant, that new and living way in which you can find life in that eternal. There is security in covenant. David found it, and you can find it. May God bless you. Lord willing.